And you can't have small groups of people, individuals, changing that at all and making it benefit them. You can't. So this is what's beautiful
this
about Bitcoin.
Is really
Bitcoin doesn't care.
It's so unique in human history.
It's unique.
Yeah.
Bitcoin doesn't care about you.
Yeah.
Meaning that Bitcoin treats the richest person in the world the same as the poorest person in the world, because both are playing on the same playing field now. And that is just beautiful.
Welcome to the show, Prince Philip. How are you doing?
Thank you very much for having me. You can call me, thank you for calling me Prince Philip. You can call me Philip.
Philip, thank you so much.
Yeah. Hey, thank you very much for having me on this.
Well, my pleasure. I watched and listened to that interview. I listened to that interview with Daniel Prince, another Prince, and from UK. And it was an amazing discussion. So I would actually recommend everyone to listen to that sort of as an introduction to our talk, because I don't want to like go into all the aspects you already talked about and want to use the time as efficiently as possible. But still, I would still ask you to give like a brief like background, like where you come from, what's the whole story about, you know, but your sort of royal ancestry and your connection to Bitcoin, maybe your path.
Okay. So I was born in America, in Fairfax, Virginia. That's near Washington, D.C. My father is Crown Prince Alexander of Yugoslavia, but now Crown Prince Alexander of Serbia. My mother is Princess Maria da Gloria Orleans Bragancia, and that's of the Brazilian imperial royal family. They met in Portugal many years ago, but they had my older brother first in 1980 in Chicago, and then me and my twin brother in 1982 in Washington. But sadly, a couple of years or so after having my parents separated, and we moved with my mother to Sevilla, Spain. We lived there, my brothers and I, for a few years till we're about five years old, and my mother remarried to the Duke of Segorbe, El Duque de Segorbe, and my father remarried as well to a Greek American lady, and there was a decision made that my twin and I, my brothers and I had to move to London to be with my father. And that was very tough, because being separated from your mother from such a young age was very difficult. Yes, we did go back to Spain during holidays to go see my mother, but it was a very tough experience. As you know, that Serbia, well, Yugoslavia at the time did not have a monarchy. It was dissolved. Well, I should say dissolved. It was taken down by the communists, by Tito, and so it's a very complicated story during the Second World War. But 1943 was when it was basically handed over to Tito, and my grandfather, King Peter II, was the last reigning king of Yugoslavia, Serbia. Now there is no monarchy in Serbia, but the idea of monarchy still lives very strong. The Karađorđević dynasty is known by most people here. It's a very important dynasty, because it was created in the very early 1800s, when my great grandfather Karađorđe, his name was. He was from very humble backgrounds, but he managed to make a name out of himself, becoming an affluent livestock trader, merchant. And he was also a general in the army. And during those years, for a few centuries, Serbia was under Ottoman Empire rule. And so Serbs were essentially, I guess you could say, they were servants, slaves to the Ottomans. And obviously people didn't like that. So he led the first uprising against the Ottoman Empire for the Serbians. He was a very charismatic figure, very tall. I think he was like people said he was like almost like over 2 meters, like 2 meters 10 centimeters. So he was a big man, very strong, and he led that first uprising that that basically led to Serbia becoming independent, its own state again, during the Ottoman Empire rule. There was a subsequent uprising by the Obrenović family as well. They were another dynasty during the time. Serbia went through two dynasties. There was change from Karađorđe and the big Karađorđević is a son of Karađorđe from the beginning to the Obrenović, and Obrenović were not, they weren't very popular, and sadly there was a regicide. They were actually killed off. But then in 1903, my great grandfather, King Peter I, came to power and was a very, very famous, very popular king during the early 1900s. He was very key in actually moving Serbia away from the control as well, the system of the Austro-Hungarian Germans, and he wanted to deal more with the West, I guess, but also including Russia, with the Anglosphere, I guess, but including Russia. And this didn't sit too kindly with the Austro-Hungarians, and so they imposed sanctions on Serbia. But he managed to transition all of Serb commerce to his new partners, and did that quite quickly in a matter of a few years. And he became very popular, and he built very strong trade relations with these with his new partners, with his new alliance, and made Serbia very prosperous during the time. His son was King Alexander I, and he was the one who created Yugoslavia. First, it was the Kingdom of the Croats, Serbians, Croats, and Slovenes, but later incorporated the six other nations that people are known right now. They're independent nations. He did this in order to protect the region from Austro-Hungarian control and threat and other threats during the time. This was during the 20s and going into the 30s. Sadly, he was assassinated in 1934. This was the first assassination caught on camera. My grandfather at the time was too young to become king. He was only 13 years old. So King Alexander's the first cousin, Prince Paul became the regent king. But when my grandfather became of age, in 1941, he became the king, King Peter I, but that was at a very hard time during the Second World War. And then communism happened. Serbia went through, I say there were fake years of communism during, I mean, we talk about this afterwards, so just to talk about the royalty. And we were exiled completely from, Yugoslavia at the time. All the family, they were taken, their property was taken, their citizenship was taken. They were all made enemy of the state. My father was made an enemy of the state at like only 2 years old. I mean, it was, it's all crazy, really. But
without any restitution, Philip?
No, that still is a problem today. That was still something that we're fighting for. Uh-huh. We should have some very nice properties that were built by our ancestors that should be in our possession, and then loads of arts and books and beautiful properties. And some of it disappeared, some of it might never be found, but there's one still out there. With regards to the palace, there's two palaces in the same grounds compound in Belgrade. Those are still, of course, owned by the state. Well, I should say they are taken care of by the state. My father lives there at the moment with my stepmother, and they are still not given back to us, but that's pretty much the only property that there's some sort of use of. But to this day, we haven't really been given anything back at all, and we're fighting for it.
So Philip, so, you know, I'm not an expert on the history, you know, of Serbia or former Yugoslavia, but it's a fascinating story. I mean, the only thing I always encountered is the, you know, this the war crimes that have been, you know, not only perpetrated on Serbia or former Yugoslavia in, is that the year 1999? Could you talk about that? Do you want to talk about this? I mean, because it's, I find it furiously, I mean, well, maddening, to be honest with you. I mean, because it's still ongoing, you know. I mean, the whole propaganda, the psyops, the war crimes, the whole military financial complex.
Yes, of course.
It's a big story, but I think maybe you can give a bigger picture, like.
Yeah. Sure. Well, I mean, this is all really the problem with so the socialist years, the communist years, I should say, Yugoslavia thought they were very prosperous, but actually it was fake. They were actually propped up by a lot of American money. The Americans wanted to keep Yugoslavia alive, support Tito essentially, to have that sort of leverage state with Russia, because obviously there was an alliance between Tito and Stalin during the time as well. But Yugoslavia. How to put it? Look, this is a good way to put it. So there was the Warsaw Pact, which was a sort of retaliation to NATO forming in the, I think it was in the 50s or 60s, but anyway, it was around then. And that Warsaw Pact actually fell through, and that was meant to incorporate the countries that were not NATO. So Russia, Poland, and all those satellite states around Russia. Yugoslavia was not part of that Warsaw Pact. They were sort of somewhat neutral. But when that Warsaw Pact fell through, it didn't work, then the Americans and the Brits thought that propping up Yugoslavia was not really of any use anymore. So the funding sort of dried up, and Serbia fell further into financial crisis. They started borrowing money from the IMF and running up huge deficits. And then when Tito died in 1980, he had no succession planning, which was one of the problems of a dictatorship and not one of the problems of a monarchy, is that Yugoslavia started to disintegrate, and which led to the bloody wars in the 90s. So 1992 was the first, were the first big, really bloody wars, but you know, that happened in mainly around Sarajevo and Bosnia Herzegovina area. And the world wanted to, I say the world, the West wanted to demonize Serbia. But didn't want to tell the world that they wanted to teach the world that there was actually two sides to the story. I'm not going to get into the complex bit over here, but the West was meddling with that and saying that the Muslims in Bosnia area were the ones who were being, let's say, given the hard time. But actually, it was both ways round. I mean, it was horrible years what they went through. It was the worst, probably some of the worst crimes in Europe, in war crimes in Europe since the Second World War, I believe. Then what that then led to with countries like the separation of Croatia happened quite peacefully, but then Bosnia was bloody, Slovenia was quite peaceful. And then we got to the point where it came to 1999, Milosevic was in power. And America decided to, NATO with America decided to flex their muscles and oil the war machine, as you spoke about. And they bombed Belgrade, Serbia, to smithereens almost. It was for no real reason. Yes, they said to get rid of Milosevic. Milosevic, horrible person, he should have gone rid of. But that could have happened within the country and not with the help of, let's say, inverted brackets, help of the of NATO. Because the damage done from that was horrible. It was just in a second, people weren't warned at all, and the next thing you know, bombs everywhere. And to this day, you speak to people where I live in Belgrade, and people are still in shock from that almost. So the trust with the Americans and the West was further distant. and that's that. And you can see that's sort of that's happening now in Ukraine and with Russia. You know, you don't blame the Russians for what they're doing, because the Americans are putting their forces, or you know, they're trying to put Russia's countries where a lot of Russians are to make into NATO country, when Russia actually warned the US that if they did that, there'll be consequences. But anyway, that's another story. So yeah, where was I? Was that the bombings here in Belgrade in Serbia and the wars over here had horrible consequences. And on top of that, there was no help coming from the West afterwards. It was just bomb and get out. And then that was 1999. And what happens in 2001, 9/11, and then all the focus on back to the Middle East and Afghanistan. So yeah, there we go. It was just business, really. And they got to test out a lot of their new equipment here as well. Depleted uraniums and cluster bombings and oh God knows what.
Oh Jesus, yeah. I remember. Yeah, you know, the reason I think it's important to talk about it, because you know, I'm not really investigative journalist in this kind of topic, and there are really brilliant people out there who can even give a bigger context, you know.
Yes.
But I think the reason, you know, my podcast of course focused on Bitcoin, and the reason I'm asking you is because I want to talk to you about Bitcoin, because the experiences, the history, the whole pain and suffering that the people of Serbia or former Yugoslavia have gone through, it makes you to that what you are today, you know, or that person, that human being. So, and since I listened to you on Daniel Prince podcast and what you said, you sort of have this calling or you feel, I mean, that's how I interpret it. You feel this calling or mission ethos to sort of orange pill or educate and inform and inspire the people of your country. So what I want to know is, like, what are the pain points, what could be the psychological, emotional things that you could somehow address to open up, to inspire, to make people more curious, educate them, inform them, and then eventually let them take the action. You know, it doesn't necessarily, you know, need to be like El Salvador, you know, going like legal tender. This is like too grand, like too big of a dream, but hey, who knows? I mean, everything is converging, all the parameters, the conditions, everything is like, it's madness what's going on geopolitically, politically, macroeconomically. I mean, I don't have to tell you, yourself in the financial division. So I don't know, where do you want to start it off? Like, what is your calling? What's your path?
Here's the thing. I've lived in London most of my life. I was at university in London, and I worked in London afterwards. I did go to 1 year to study in Spain, 1 year, and also I studied in Switzerland for 1 year. And I worked in Cyprus for almost 2 years. But then the rest of my professional life has been in London, and I've been working for just 9 years actually for an asset manager. And I thought I understood the world when I was working in my earlier days. And as you grow older, you see there's things happening around the world that just don't make sense, that just don't add up. And I think this is something very common with a lot of Bitcoiners. I got into Bitcoin 2017, and I knew what it meant. I knew about the inflation issue and all that, and it was fantastic. But I wasn't a maxi then. I got distracted by shitcoins, like most people do.
And we all went through this pain.
But it's part of the learning process. When Corona hits, I knew something was not right with when Corona hits. It's, things didn't add up there. But for me, my personal experience, it was great, because I was able to then work at home and spend more time with my son and wife. And then I was working from home, and I was always thinking before that, when am I going to move back to Serbia? My wife is Serbian. My son was born in Belgrade. We went there to make sure he was born there, and he speaks Serbian fluent Serbian because his mother speaks it to him. So it's fantastic. And we're thinking, you know, one that we should move back to Serbia soon. And I've always wanted to move back to Serbia, but I didn't know how and when and what I'll do there. But the fact that I was working from home online, I was like, hey, this is my chance. So I told work, I'm moving to Serbia. This is early days of lockdowns. They were quite happy to accept it. They didn't think it was the lockdowns and all that the problems were going to last very long. So I moved to Serbia. And soon after I moved to Serbia, I think my philosophy has changed a little bit. When you spend more time here, put it this way, I was more brainwashed in the UK. And when I spend more time here, you open, your mind becomes more open. I've always thought I had a very open mind to things. You know, I can change opinions quite easily if something makes more sense. But this is the case over here in Serbia. Things start to really make more sense over here because the people here have gone through, I guess, what the West is going through right now in a different way. But there's repetitions, there's cycles that the people here know what propaganda is, know.
Exactly.
They know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They've lived through it. They've lived through the communist years. And then they lived through hard times of the wars of the 90s as well. So they know what's going on. And they know look, they've had a hard time here. So they're switched on. Not saying that everyone is, but most people are switched on. And you can have a much more open conversation here than people with the West. And this is something that was really, I mean, it was great. It was an eye opener for me. And that's when I started to study more about Bitcoin. And I realized, oh my God, this is, this is it. This solves everything. This is incredible. And that's why I figured out Bitcoin. And that's when, I mean, moving on to Serbia and its views on Bitcoin is, not everyone here is into Bitcoin, of course, like the rest of the world. But I'd say the open-mindedness of people here is a good thing, and that will help the education of Bitcoin. Look, because Serbs know what inflation is. In the 90s, they had hyperinflation. You know, they know what real inflation, what serious inflation, hyperinflation is. So that's that done. So that's not too many people to convince there.
What's the current inflation rate? I'm sorry to interrupt you. What's the current inflation rate?
You know what? I think it's about 6 or 7. Don't quote me. But I've noticed since I've moved here and since I've been living here for a year, just over a year and a half, that things are going up just by living here. But to tell the truth, I haven't been keeping tabs of the actual current inflation here. Mate, something to look up on. Thank you for reminding me.
Because I think it's important. Because I think it's the, you know, that's why I want to talk about the pain point. Like, what are the pain point? Because, you know, as you said, people that have gone through this, they know exactly what propaganda is, the brainwashing, the psyops, the, you know, and especially the inflation rate, you know, the debasement of currencies. So they know what existential, you know, suffering is. And that's why I think Bitcoin is would be so easy to, you know, to introduce to more and more people.
Yes, that's it. As you perfectly described over there, it's people here. So another thing about Serbs in general is, you know, everyone's heard of Nikola Tesla because that's because Nikola Tesla is a brilliant, a brilliant mind. And you get a lot of brilliant minds in Serbia, a lot of scientific mathematical brains here. So the technical side of Bitcoin will be understood by a lot of people here. I mean, there's talks about trying to make Serbia more open to sort of startups for technology startups and things like that. But at the same time, why not make work on Bitcoin development projects here as well? And anything Bitcoin really. Serbs, I really think that Serbs will be open to it. Of course, they are the older generation, which are not so tech savvy. And here's the other thing. So the younger generation are, the millennial group and Gen Z in general are tech savvy, and they'll be ones to quick understand it. But the older people, you know, they're not really on Twitter much. So they're not on Twitter. They're not really much on social media too often and stuff. So they don't really. They're just not very computer literate, and that's going to be a bit of an issue. But that's not the case. I mean, I'm guessing that's the same case in places like El Salvador, where they have issues with the older generation. But everyone here does have a smartphone, and you can make a wallet very easy to use. You can make it just a couple of pushes of a button, and there it is. Okay, and you know, there's obviously some issues with security in that, but that will become stronger with time. So yeah, I think Serbia is a very good as a potential place for Bitcoin adoption. Okay, but the other obstacle in Serbia right now is the current government we have. There's actually elections happening tomorrow, general elections, but it's pretty much predicted that the current president, who's been the president since 2012, he's a strong man, will win this. He's managed over his rule to destroy, we'll say destroy, he's managed to weaken the opposition a lot. He has a good control over the media. So Serbia's going through another sort of, it's going through, I guess, strongman tactics. And he's very smart. And I don't think a Bitcoin adoption will sounds very good to him. But put it this way, if people understand that Bitcoin fixes situations like this, then they will start to move closer to it. I will do my best to educate people here. I'm opening up a foundation that will work on local projects. Firstly, on environmental issues, you know, we've had issues with river pollution. Recently there's this issue going on with Rio Tinto. They want to mine lithium in Serbia and destroy some beautiful landscape in the countryside of Serbia. And this is to make electric cars. I won't go down that route, but I'm not the biggest fan of electric cars. I think that doesn't really solve the world's problems. And obviously that money was not going to really stay in Serbia. It's going to go back into Rio Tinto's project and pockets, and it will circulate it will go back into the pockets of the globalists. So there's things over here I want to work on those environmental issues and social, maybe working some social issues, but also work with cultural heritage, and which is to do with protecting of old buildings. They're destroying old buildings here. Like on our road where we live, there's a few nice villas here, and one of them very recently was just taken down because someone buys it for not, I mean, it's quite expensive, but for him it's a good deal. He buys it, he then destroys a beautiful villa and then builds a higher rise flat building or flats over there just for generating income. That just brings more congestion to the area, and it just destroys the beautiful architecture in parts of Belgrade. And things like that are pressing issues in Serbia.
Yeah.
So I'm going to work on that. Then on the side as well, I wouldn't say on the side, I'm going to have the Bitcoin education page.
Awesome.
And I will try to teach people. So it's a bit like what Michael Saylor's done with hope.com. Something along those lines. Mm-hmm. Make it in Serbian. I think there are some good videos in Serbian there as well. If not, we can make some. And then I will.
You could organize a Bitcoin conference.
Yeah, I was thinking that as well. Make a Bitcoin conference. Yeah, I was thinking that.
I mean, it wouldn't be so far for us. Even our daughter is like 15 months old. We could even travel to. I mean, we would love to. You know, we have so many friends from Croatia, from Serbia, and it's really fascinating to hear their experiences, their testimonials, their knowledge. You know, about what's going on. So. I've been talking to, probably Jeff Bruce, and maybe, you've heard Samson Mao, of a former, CSO, I think, at Blockstream, yep, but yes. Now he's sort of the appointed ambassador.
Excellion, yes.
Yep. Bitcoin adoption. So I'm a huge believer, and I trust in the power of, you said the word, localism or local, circular economy. That's what actually Samson Mao 5 years ago, 4 years ago predicted there would be somehow mass adoption coming on a retail level. So, You know, and I mean, with a deflationary currency, a money that is appreciates exponentially in purchasing power. I mean, what could we want? You know, a money that is immutable, you know, not confiscatable, totally distributed and decentralized. I mean, what else would we want, right?
Yeah, correct. No, definitely come to Serbia in the region. It's so beautiful. There's a lot of beautiful tourism to do over here. It's a great place. So hosting a Bitcoin conference here would be great. Yes, as you said, you know, talking about Bitcoin adoption, legal tender, and issues like that. I mean, that's one thing I'll be trying to work towards as well. But that's through the education. But as well, you know, work with, maybe come up with projects over here, find some people to work with to start up Bitcoin pension schemes, to try and get Bitcoins on companies' reserves, assets, on just even on smaller businesses to try and get Bitcoin on their treasuries, as well. I say treasuries for the bigger companies, on their in their accounts as well. And myself, I would like to one day be full-time Bitcoin. I mean, that's where I see my calling.
What about Bitcoin mining? I mean, does former Yugoslavia or Serbia has like any kind of
location? There is happening. Unconfirmed, but I know that there's some mining happening down near Kosovo, and I think it's done by the government because they're getting energy for free there. But apart from that, I can't comment about how mining there. I know there are miners out there. I haven't met any, but I've met people who know miners. So there's mining happening in Serbia. Of course, I mean, there's mining happening all over the world.
Uh-huh. What about the issuance of bonds? I mean, you know, like...
You
know, what I want to talk to you about is, could you imagine like the issuance of bonds, like not, you know, sort of similar to volcano bonds in El Salvador? You know, I think this concept of free private cities, you know, I've been talking also to Peter Young and Titus Gebel who created the concept of free private cities. And now, you know, the Bitcoin city, the whole infrastructure is being built, at least let's say in the long term, the next, whatever, 4 or 5 years. I think it could be really, Samson Mao actually also talked about it a lot, like how these cities could look like. And I think this is the, you know, the power of regional, local circular economies that's going to prosper and blossom. And hey, I mean, that would be like that's a beautiful vision, you know. I see
it is a great vision, and I think these Bitcoin bonds are fantastic. Yeah, I can see the problem people having them, that they're closely linked to the government, and Bitcoin is not about that. But I think it's just part of the process of getting people more on board in Bitcoin and helping to build the infrastructure around it. I mean, over here, for example, here in Serbia, if there was a Bitcoin bond, how I would structure it would be, I mean, similar to the volcano bond, you would obviously spend a good portion of it into Bitcoin itself. But then with the rest of it, you would buy. I mean, you would help. So Serbia has its energy, electricity comes from a lot of coal sources, and it's, as you know, it's quite dirty, and it creates a lot of air pollution. So I would work towards trying to move away from coal into more. The cleaner energies, but we have some oil here like that could work. There's some gas as well that could work as well, and there's some good hydroelectric potential places over here as well, and that will, you know, for infrastructure around that and create new places for energy. And as we all very know, that Bitcoin's not only just a monetary revolution, it's an energy one too, so it would just help to secure the Serbia's electrical grid over here. And that's one thing, it would just yeah, it would be a plus for everyone, a net plus for everyone.
Yeah, and even if you use coal, you know, I trust in the power of technological innovation, and I think you know, let's just say we can't get rid of the environmental pollution. That's a huge concern, because this is the real concern, not this whole CO2
pollution. No, that's not, no.
You probably know, you know, Safeed and Amos talks very deeply and comprehensively.
Of course.
book, and
we talked about it.
it's like ranting about it, and it's totally right. You know, it's a huge fraud and hoax. But hey, you can't say that too loud. So, but anyway, I'll say it anyway. But I think, you know, with technological innovation, I think we can minimize at least, you know, the impact of this environmental pollution. Well, even if you use,
You can find ways. I know there's ways of filtering coal and things like that. But I think it's just good to try and move away, because coal, I mean, it is dirty, and over here you can feel the air pollution in Belgrade. That's one problem. If there's no wind and the air is still, you can feel it. Or if the wind is blowing slightly in the wrong direction, you can really feel it. That's not great for kids, especially for lung development and things like that. So, but if it's the only energy source that we have to live with it, that's fine. But let's try and make it as clean as possible. And I know there's issues over here with regulations in terms of putting the right filters on them. And because some companies are now not owned by EU or American companies, that they don't have to be regulated. So they don't have to service the filters that are on the chimneys. I mean, that's one of the only things that the EU does well is maybe with that. Otherwise, I'm not the biggest fan. But we can, with a Bitcoin bond, where you could pay for that sort of infrastructure to make coal cleaner. I would like to drive away from coal altogether, but if we can make it clean as possible, I'm for that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to talk to you also about the media. I mean, would you have the possibility? I mean, you know, we have to mention again, you know, this amazing show that you were on and that clip that went totally mm-hmm. viral. Not even sure what's the show called. Is it
it's the Ivan Ivanovich show.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Večer sa Ivan Ivanovićem. Evening with Ivan Ivanovich.
Yeah. I tried to go through the whole show because it's like partially you speak like in, what is it, Serbian Croatian?
So that was a great thing that we managed to sort out. Firstly, I have to big thank you to Ivan Ivanovich for having us on this show. Mm-hmm. The reason he had us on the show was, okay, he has the biggest talk show in Serbia. In America, it would be the equivalent of the Saturday Night Live or something. So he was following us on Twitter since I moved back to Serbia, and he was very happy with what he saw. And I guess he's also quite anti-government, the government over here. So it's pretty obvious. They're really out for him, and so he's been very open about against them, which is great, because he has balls and we like that. Mm-hmm. So he had us on the show. He invited us to the show, we're like, wow, that's amazing. So we talked to him about it. So we met with him a few days before, and he said, you know, I understand about my Serbian is not very, very good yet. He says, don't worry, we can have subtitles and just be yourself. Speak some Serbian, but you know, if you want to express yourself better, speak in English. So I was like, fantastic. So I was allowed to do that, and that was great, because I got to be myself.
Yeah,
and it's something that's very rare for me to do that here in front of the media, because my Serbian is not very good, so I don't really speak much in the media here. I can do a lot of text, but that doesn't really cover everything. So
I feel you. It's now like I managed to get with Farsi, you know, because I can't speak either. My native mother tongue, Farsi, from Iran. So I can hardly, like, you know, speak a little bit.
It's frustrating, isn't it? It's really frustrating, especially someone in my position who's a public figure now, and I can't express myself.
It's really frustrating. Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing. So I was able to do it. I was able to do it in English. That was great. So obviously people are going to be upset that I don't speak the language, but people are understanding and they realize, okay, this is fine. You know, as long as he's saying some good things, then this is great. And that also relaxed me as well afterwards, because I got to be myself on one of the biggest stages in Serbia. So that was a huge positive for me. And he asked me about crypto, which then opened up my new life as Prince Philip in Bitcoin. Yeah, and I was really happy he asked me that. And the way he asked me, you know, can we talk about crypto? So when I heard the word crypto, that got me going. And I was like, no, it's not about crypto. It's all about perfect Bitcoin moment. And blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. No, you killed it.
Thank you. I was really happy
that you took a position and you know, and then, you know, made a clear, crystal clear position, and your crystal clear statement it's either, you know, it's Bitcoin or anything else is shitcoin, and yeah. You know, and so in a way, sort of, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really happy about that, because I didn't realize those 2 or 3 minutes would, but sort of did have a feeling they would be picked up by Bitcoiners, but not to the extent that it is getting attention and traction right now. So I'm really humbled by it, and I'm really big, you know, I want to thank the Bitcoin community as well for being so accepting and warming and excited about it like I am as well. And it's thanks to them that I became a max Bitcoin maxi. So yeah, really cool.
Yeah, the plebs. Yeah,
yeah, the plebs. Really, yeah,
a very unique characteristics of the whole Bitcoin community and Bitcoin plebs. So Philip, I want to talk to you about you talk about this network that you're gonna, you know, maybe initially start a foundation, education. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've got all these people in the Bitcoin community, you know, would it be Samson Mao, Max Kaiser? So I think I'm totally optimistic. I see this vision, you know, where, hey, who knows, you know, people are already asking me because, you know, we are in Austria, you know, this whole criminal thing that's going on with mandatory vaccination.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
The whole process, it's so sickening and so criminal, I think. But anyway, and there are more and more people thinking seriously about emigrating, about moving out of this country or any other country. And I think we are on a precipice of something. Do you think so?
Yes. Well, first, one of the things I spoke about in Ivan Ivanovich's show is something that one of the reasons I moved back to Serbia as well was also to help to give people it's almost set an example for other diaspora Serbs around the world to say, hey, it's okay to move back to Serbia, because Serbia is going through a depopulation situation. It's a bit of a demographical nightmare, that there's a huge brain drain. When people are educated here and they know better, I say they know better, they want to make more money, that they leave Serbia and they go and this has also been happening to Yugoslavia after the Second World War with communism, and a lot of the monarchist supporting people went and moved abroad. The biggest population outside of Serbia is in Canada. Then you have big populations in America, Germany, Australia, UK,
and Austria. And I
everywhere.
Think we have 300,000 Serbs. And,
sorry, I should say the biggest population is Austria, but that's almost too close. It's bordering. So, but yes. Sorry, I should say that Austria, yeah. So I wanted to tell people, look, Serbia is got so much potential right now. It's not like those other developed nations, but because of that, you have the potential to change things here for the better and make a better world in the developed world, so to speak. Oops. And also, look, I don't speak Serbian. I'm trying to learn as well. So if a lot of the diaspora are speaking broken Serbian or no Serbian at all, but say, hey, look, you know, I'm doing it as well. So, yeah, when it comes to other people who are interested in Serbia, I'd say yes, because of the potential over here for change and for development in a good way, I'd say, yeah, come to Serbia. Let's work together. This place is open for foreigners to come live here, and it's a ground full of opportunities. But it's an open culture to everything. I've said enough there. Yeah, but yeah, it's exciting, and I'm really optimistic about that.
Fantastic. No, really fascinating. So Philip, just before we wrap this up, I mean, you know, when you, you know, as yourself, you've gone already, you know, deeply into the rabbit hole of Bitcoin. And once, you know, you read and listen and do all this and think about it and imagine and really understand the power, the essence and the fundamental consequences that Bitcoin can bring, you know, when the soil is healthy, you know, when the roots are really healthy. I mean, what would be, from your perspective, in your vision, the second, if you want to call it second and third and fourth and so on, order effects of Bitcoin on society, for technology, for innovation, for prosperity, for the evolution of humanity, whatever?
I think I mentioned this in Daniel Prince's podcast, but I'm just so inspired by it. by Bitcoin's time preference change of on life. That is, to me, it's because that's is, I mean, it's beautiful, and it's going to change, it's going to help humanity change for the better. So I could just see it, if when we more of us adopt Bitcoin, and when more nations adopt Bitcoin, it's just going to create such a better world for our children. That's something that's giving me huge inspiration to do what I'm doing, and to work towards Bitcoin education, and to meet other Bitcoiners, and to exchange with brilliant minds in the Bitcoin world, and just as I said, to make a better world for our children. You know, you have a 15-year-old. I've got a 4-year-old, and my world changed dramatically when my look on life changed dramatically when I had my son, because I realized, you know, I have a human being to take care of, a beautiful boy to take care of, and I don't have anything.
It totally changes radically everything once you have a child.
Exactly, and you need to secure the future for them as well. Mm-hmm. And this is not just for not for myself, but for every parent out there. Yeah. And the world that we live in is not secure at the moment.
Not at all. Yeah.
Everything's been taken away from us. You know, we don't have security of property these days. You know, we're engaging in stupid, risky activities. It's a joke what's happening right now, all because of this fiat system. And we're just descending further and further into some crazy clown world.
Yeah, and it's really truly a clown world. I mean, you got to laugh about it, because sometimes I don't know whether I should be crying or laughing out loud.
But I think humor helps that for the sanity. And I think also humor does help with calling out this the craziness out there as well. I think one of the biggest tools that we have is humor, and brings a lot of light to the problems. And I don't know who said this quote, but I've always thought this is great, that you know, bad times create wise people.
Something like that. Hard times
wise people Hard times create wise people. Wise people create good times. Good times create silly people. Silly people create hard times. And we are definitely in the silly people hard times.
That's a good one.
So now we have to be the wise people, Bitcoiners, and we have to create good times, but make sure those good times remain for good and not have silly people. But that's what Bitcoin is so beautiful. I talk about the time preference aspect about it, but also the fact that Bitcoin is something that you can't change. You can't change a protocol. Okay. It's as solid as 1 + 1 = 2.
Yeah.
And you can't have small groups of people, individuals, changing that at all and making it benefit them. You can't. So this is what's beautiful about Bitcoin.
Really,
Bitcoin doesn't care.
It's so unique in human history.
It's unique. Yeah. Bitcoin doesn't care about you.
Yeah.
Meaning that Bitcoin treats the richest person in the world the same as the poorest person in the world, because both are playing on the same playing field now. And that is just beautiful.
Yeah. And you know what the beautiful part about, when you think about, you know, this evolution or adoption phase, or we don't even need mass adoption. We just need like 3-5, maybe maximum of 10% of the whole population of the earth to really make this like viral and exponential, and, you know, by orders of magnitude faster. And
yes,
you know, that's all what we
you
need.
You just need that tipping point that can be 10, 15, 20, maybe even 30%, but that tipping point, we're getting towards that. I mean, I don't know what the full adoption of Bitcoin is around the world, or people who own it, but, you know, it's growing. People compare it to how the internet's growing, and it's growing about the same speed or faster, but that's promising.
We're doing this for our children. I think you said something very important. We're doing this for our children, and, you know, and I could have never imagined, you know, to have a child in this kind of world, but, you know, my daughter is like the soul of my life, the light of my love, you know, I mean, it's
exactly,
it's well, a that's unique experience. I think you can't even describe it, but.
That's what makes the world work in a good place, is love. Love is what makes children. Love is what keeps children in a healthy world. And love is what Bitcoin is as well. So it's beautiful, really.
Beautifully said.
Bitcoin is just packs. Bitcoin backs that.
Yeah.
Bitcoin backs love. Love backs Bitcoin.
Yeah. And we can't even imagine what kind of impact it will have, you know, on, I mean, I'm not sure whether, you know, I'm not even religious, but I think a deeply spiritual, I think you're somehow also like, I somehow think the way I studied you a little bit is you have a little bit of religious background, mm-hmm. spiritual background, but I think it's important. I think we are on the precipice of something, let's just call it spiritual, like finding ourselves and building a better world and really living the ethos, you know, of as you said, you know, of unconditional love and prosperity and abundance, you know, as Jeff Booth also talks about this. So
yes,
I think we're going.
I think when you talk about the spirituality is something that we've been missing a lot in the last 100 years almost, especially since the Second World War, when the race towards technology, which has been seen as one of the greatest advancements of humankind, but I'd also sometimes see it as one of the greatest stepbacks of humankind, is missing that spirituality. And that is something key to what Bitcoin is. Bitcoin is almost, it's spiritual, and it wakes up people's spiritualness as well, religious beliefs and things like that, which I think is really healthy for society, because it gives good ideologies, it makes for good families, it makes for good societies, good communities. And I mean, look at it's, I think that's one of the most important parts. If you look at, I take an example of some beautiful architecture that used to happen in up until before the adoption of fiat, 1913, was some of the most incredible architecture happened because of technology, innovation, and because of spirituality. And you have this incredible architecture from and these beautiful churches and things like that. And nowadays, the architecture is beautiful and modern stuff, but it's missing that spirituality.
Yeah.
I think there's something there that I'm trying to get to. I'm not quite sure yet, but this is a thought I've been having recently. And yeah, it just makes, I mean, you just have to have those morals and ethics.
And ethos,
Taught the ethos is, not taught to you, but just handed over to you, which makes the world just a better place. Think.
Beautifully said. No, it's one of the most fascinating.
And I think the last 30, 40 years have been the powers that be are trying to destroy people using that spirituality, turning people's religions against another. And that's
You just need to listen to all these, you know, puppets or whatever, these technocratic scientists of a World Economic Forum, Harari or whatever. I mean, it's mind-boggling
it's disgusting.
You know, like, we are like animals. We can just be hacked, and you know, we have no spiritual. We have no soul. And I mean, I couldn't.
He wrote one of the most books, one of the bestsellers in the world. You know, Sapiens, mm-hmm. and people think, oh, he's a genius. He's a genius. And I got to say that some of the stuff he said in that Sapiens is actually quite intelligent, because he is an intelligent man. But he's not on humanity's side. Put it that way. And going back to the religions getting along, for example, it happens all the time. You know, I give the example of Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia is made up of states that contained three big religions. You had the Orthodox, you had the Catholics, and you had Muslims, and they all got along together very well there. Yeah.
Well, I really enjoyed this conversation, Philip. It was really
likewise.
Lots to learn about, lots to think about. So is there anything like important we should have mentioned, or you want to like tell my listeners about?
Well, yeah, thank you for being into the Bitcoin.
Thank
you for teaching me about Bitcoin, and I look forward to working with all of you on exciting projects and a better life for us all, really. So I just wanted to finish with that.
Well, thank you, appreciate it. Where can people find you, Philip, again, and where, any other platforms?
So I'll release the website soon, which will be announced on my Twitter. My Twitter is at Prince, with, that's PRINCFILIP1, Prince Philip. The prince does not have an E.
Yeah.
and Philip with an F and a one. And I will announce my website soon. The foundation soon will be taking donations in Bitcoin, and we'll be working on projects that will involve Bitcoin and anything good for what we're talking about this great show.
Well, thank you so much for all your work and, you know, your ethos and, you know, your commitment to this, because, you know, we're doing this again for our future, for our children's future. And hope to do this sometime in the near future. And I can't wait, you know.
Yeah, I'd love to be back on. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. Really, it was, you too. It was a great talk. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.